Vulnerable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
We are.
I love it. It's Tuesday night with our admirable friends. Hey, Alex.
Tuesday night.
It is Tuesday night.
It starts the week for us, really.
It sure does.
Really does. And last week, we had a really good week. Great participation, I thought, with everybody on the number one mind quality. Somebody just texted in, I love the name of your show. That's terrific.
That's sweet. Thanks.
That's terrific. And yeah, don't forget to use our chat line at bbsradio.com, admirable/admirablefriends, during the night. Or send us an email to hello@admirablefriends.org for the material that we'll be covering. As those regular listeners and those new to the show, basically our format is each week we cover one of 10 mind qualities, or what might be classically called 10 perfections. And we talk about ideal inner mind, and admirable friends work on the inner, hopefully taking their outer stress and turning it into building an inner mind quality. And last week we covered the number one overall mind quality being determination, and I thought that was a great participation.
I enjoyed the show.
We'll find out a little more today why it was so important, I think. When we talk about discernment.
Or discernment. Well, we actually used discernment last week when we had to make a determination, especially an overall determination, as we began to think about our overall life. And, you know, we were actually talking this morning, Carol. Some people are really prepared to make that overall determination, and some aren't. Whether it's doubt or maybe preferring kind of a wait-and-see, bottoms-up approach. They'd rather make weekly determinations consistent with what we've been teaching and reviewing, and then kind of approach that overall determination over time. And then others say, look, I really want to work on my purpose statement, my vision, and I want to get this thing underway. Would you help me with it? So by no means do we have an exact approach with determination.
Right, it's not a one-size-fits-all. I think it's wherever you're at and where you're comfortable with, because I kind of liken it to, we're not looking to hit a grand slam every time. Right. I mean, singles is just as good, you know?
And I think most people can get the importance of making an overall determination, but actually writing one down for themselves and reorienting their lives as this being the keystone of what they're approaching, that's a big leap.
And even though there's an order to the qualities, let's not forget there's nine others. There's a lot of ways into this sort of a path. You know, something like goodwill that may come naturally to somebody would be a perfect channel to kind of go into if determination.
And to actually experience the benefit of living inner mind qualities.
Right, you know, test it out with one that's probably a little closer to home and then work your way forward. But then again, there's people that are ready to go into determination.
A lot of them are the futuristic or strategic type that want to start with the end in mind. I mean, it all depends upon how you read a book, I think. If you like reading a book from front to back, that's one way. If you like reading at the end game and saying, let me go read everything and arrive at that. But it was a great topic, I thought. It really is an overriding quality, because when you think about a good determination or a commitment like that, it does require all of the mind qualities. And in particular, those mind qualities are organized, to recap for our listeners, Carol, the four basic table of contents of our mind qualities. you know, starting, of course, with the overriding quality, but then you go to the wisdom section, right?
Right, and then the letting go.
No, then we go truth next.
Wouldn't calming. Alex
help,
truth,
help,
calming.
Help out Carol here.
Letting go, calming.
I love this impromptu.
Oh, if everybody out there could have seen your face.
It's like... It's not? Why?
It was like,
it's not?
You know, it was the one question you didn't prepare for the night before.
Well, she just got out of work. Steps in the chair in the radio show, and I'm quizzing her.
It's like that movie where you're sliding in, like, the last minute into the chair.
I know.
You know?
Right.
Well, but the mind qualities are framed into four parts after you get the overriding quality.
I've got this.
All right, what are the four
parts? Wisdom, truth. Letting go and calming.
And calming.
I said that somewhere.
And they're not necessarily sequential. They're just elements, what we would call, of making a good determination. And I would say, Alex, I know you're big on discernment, but I think generally, without even your personal opinion of discernment, isn't discernment used for every one of those mind qualities?
Yeah, you know, when you look at discernment, and we're talking really about choice making, I find it very hard not to see often... life in general is compiled of many, many, many choices, actions, whether they be thoughts or words or physical actions. These are choices that are being made that we're consciously deciding. And so that's why I think discernment plays a big role, is because choice plays such a big role in our lives.
Yeah. Well, if you really break down life, it's basically three parts I see it as: intentions, actions, and results. Intentions are your thoughts. Your actions either take the form of a physical action or a word or a speech. Mm-hmm. And the result is looking through the rearview mirror and say, what just happened? The cause and effect. And that's all about tonight's show, is cause and effect. But before we get into the details of discernment, let's do the drill and let's be grateful.
Gratefuls.
Why don't you go tonight?
I'll start off tonight. The grateful tonight, I have the lovely opportunity of finding myself with new people to work with, and in particular, this one woman that I'm currently working with, in a sort of way, went out on a limb. You know, she met with me apart from her colleagues, and after meeting with me and talking with me, decided and let her other colleagues know that I would be somebody that would be welcome to work with them, and somebody they would like to work with and have do things around them and be a part of their team, so to say. And so, and she really knew nothing about me prior to that. And I'm very, very grateful for her to step outside and really take on almost vouching for me in front of this team, who I got to meet and got to experience time with them and really enjoyed them so far. And so that opportunity to meet others and to be welcomed into a team, really not knowing anything about with you, but still being introduced to them, that was I was very grateful for her to open her door up to me.
Cool. And any lesson learned from that? Or any reflection, should I say?
I believe, you know, and this comes back to tonight on discernment, I believe that she was, and I wouldn't say I was the only person that she had the opportunity to say, this is who I want to work with. And right. So she really broke it down, and after meeting with me and seeing what I could offer to the group and to the team versus maybe somebody else that she was looking to work with, you know, she really... examined it and looked over, and she had said to me, I you know, you were chosen, you know, almost very well. I didn't just pull you out of a hat and say, here, we're gonna, you know, throw you in the mix with my other team here.
Made a conscious
decision. And so you know, not to toot my own horn, I think she made a good choice.
So you learned about discernment and people choosing, and the reason I bring that up, of course, is our definition of gratitude involves an action, mm-hmm. As well as a person, something we've learned from. So we bring attention to actions, whereas we look at an appreciation in contrast to a gratitude as something that we would have kind of a feeling for things and incidents that happen to you. You might mm-hmm. be grateful for the sunshine today. That wouldn't be, you're not grateful for the sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's not a lesson learned there, and there's not an action taking place. You'd appreciate the sunshine, just to get our language straight. We make gratitudes have a bit of a deeper drill down, and in fact, we look at actions as a result of what we're grateful for, the person that we're grateful to, recognizing the kindness of that action, that they went out of their way. We even look to their motives and say that we felt their motives were earnest. Again, we're looking to the intention behind the action, all as part of discerning other kind actions that we can model from and learn from. That's a mouthful, true. I just said there. Is any of it true? Yeah. It sounds all right?
Yeah, it sounds spot on.
Okay, gratitude's for you, Carol.
My gratitude is sort of a continuation from last week. Last week, I was mentioning that the people that wrote in for the show, I was grateful to for their actions of writing in. But this week, I'm grateful to the people that wrote in. Whereas last week, it was more for the content to give us things to talk about and expose that on the show so that we could discuss what they were writing in. This week, it was because what they had written in inspired me so that it really, I'll tell you something, it just kicked up my commitment and my determination this week tremendously.
Well, you came in this morning after your morning run and you were glowing and you said, I had a greatest, and let me tell you why I had a great exercise. And you liked it back to last week's show.
Right. I thought about the people that wrote in and how much I gained from their insight and wisdom. And it's just because we're sitting here around the thing doesn't mean we shouldn't be put on a pedestal. We shouldn't be thought of as having all of the answers.
We're just facilitators.
Right. And we're slugging at it like all the other admirable friends. But it was so inspiring and heartwarming, and just to know that they were writing in
to participate.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it just really fostered that determination in me and inspired me more this morning. And as I was running, I was thinking about it, and I'm thinking, God, I feel great, and I feel very confident, and I'm so glad they're there. And
it's like we're all witnessing the shift in the conversation, aren't we? We're starting to see it. The more we repeat the cycle each week, keep our language the same as we go through the 10 mind qualities and framing our discussion, surer than heck, we're now starting to talk about our inner life, which was the hardest thing, was like pulling teeth from people, because all we want to talk about is what hot dogs we like and what candy we like and all the pleasures in our life. And all of a sudden, I think the consistency in the show, Carol, has really begun to produce fruit. And I agree with you. Last week was just great. And it was good. Just look at the stuff we got from the material
right.
this week.
And I think that just kind of added to it. So I'm grateful to those people for helping foster my, giving my practice a kick in the rear and setting me on the path. And I just can't believe how great I feel and just how wonderful it is. And I just like want to go out and but confident. I really feel more confident.
Yeah. I thought the letters, there was a element of vulnerability, and it wasn't being forced from the people writing in. It was kind of that active vulnerability where they were saying, it's okay to go ahead and share this because I know this is going to help somebody else. And here
that's
you are saying that it did.
That you see. Yeah,
that's
like,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's what I saw. And it did the same thing for me. So good one.
Okay, quickly, I'm going to send my gratitude. I actually came across today a gentleman up in the Northeast actually wrote a comment on a Tricycle article that I was reading, a fellow by the name of John Haspel, who runs the Cross River Meditation Center. It's either in Pennsylvania or New Jersey. It's right on the borderline. There's a couple of addresses. But in any case, I had just met John, and we exchanged some comments, and turned out to be three or four emails, went back and forth during the day. I'm really grateful that he took the time to kind of elaborate on the practice, and he read some of the words that I was writing to him. And he's doing a talk this evening in his meditation center up in the Northeast. And in particular, it was on overemphasizing absorbed states of mind during practice. And right now, that's where I've been at in my practice, kind of puffing my chest on absorbed states of mind. And it was really like a welcome relief to read. It just kind of karmically, he started talking about his discussion tonight was on a more balanced approach towards practicing ordinary activity like right speech and right action, in addition to absorbed states of concentration. And it's just like, thank you. I was getting myself a little bit out of balance here. And so gratitude.
So it was timely.
Yeah. And the way it's just I'm grateful for others that practice, because when he spoke in first person in his emails, talked about his practice and his experiences. And like you, I'm motivated from something like that. It's just like, yeah, there's other people
doing
this.
It's the sharing part of it,
yeah.
I think.
He openly shared the information and hopefully made a new friend, a new admirable friend. And like I said, it's I'll give him a shout out at crossrivermeditation.com. Very wise gentleman, John Haspel. Thank you very much, John. All right, let's get into the body discernment. Now that we've covered, Carol, why don't you just, or Alex, anybody want to cover the oversight of the big picture on discernment? Let's start, of course, with the definition.
Sure. We'll go ahead and read the definition. Of course, discernment is under our wisdom quality out of the four. The definition, as we have it here, is the ability to think past the mere perception or aggregate of experience and to evaluate it on a detailed basis, including making mistakes without personal guilt or remorse.
Okay. So clearly that definition is more than just choice. It's kind of a detailed choice, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
This is not like I just decide what road to go. It's deciding a little bit more detail, looking beyond it.
This is one of the definitions I go back and read time and time again, not just because it has to do with detail, but there's a lot being said in this definition,
right,
that can be easily looked over when you think about discernment, that it's just, okay, I got to choose one or the other way. What it's really saying isn't, we're not talking about choosing one way or the other. We're talking about how do we get to making the more skillful choice. What sort of steps are we taking to evaluate, to explore and break down and discover on a detailed basis which choice should be made?
Right.
There's a lot of work that's made up to that point.
Alex, it's kind of, to me, discernment is also wide in as much as it's deep. When I mean wide, it's not just taking the decision by itself. It's looking at it under the prism of a cause and effect. So we stretch it out.
Mm-hmm.
We say, what decision are we making now, and what is it, its effect? And it gets back to that intention, action, and results. So we're always kind of looking wide as well as deep. Deep in terms of what are all the facts that we're gathering, like a judicious approach. But wide in as much as I'm not just going to make this decision on face value. I'm going to look at the impact it has on others and kind of think of from a cause and effect standpoint. It almost transcends time. You know, when I think of intention, action, and results, I think of intention kind of being the future, the action being the present moment, and the results being the past. So you're actually taking into consideration all three. You're sitting there thinking about, with discernment, all three elements of time, mm-hmm. And taking them into consideration. Carol, your take on discernment?
Well, I agree with Alex. It's the drilling down, but you really, it gives you that time for pause so that you can look at it. You really do have to give yourself that space that I always talk about.
Yeah.
So you can ask.
So you look for the space to make it, because
well, knee jerk, it's going to be judgmental. Then you're just going to make that knee jerk, yes, no.
Which means you didn't slow down and look both ways before you crossed the street.
You didn't put much care or thought into it. You just...
And so judgmental to you is a knee-jerk reaction.
Almost impulsive.
Impulsive. And judicious means what to you?
Thought out. I think giving it a well-thought-out approach.
So it's more detailed. How about you, Alex? Judgmental versus judicious?
I think the judgmental comes in when you feel you've made a bad discernment and a mistake has been made. And when I look at the mistake versus the good choice in discernment, so if in discernment you're faced with two paths, one's a good choice, the other one turns out to be a mistake, you know, we quickly grab a hold and say, oh, it's a mistake, and beat ourselves up. Discernment kind of hangs over the top, no, not really having any judgment with it. And in that...
You mean judicious?
Judicious.
Yeah.
And in that kind of that vacuum of discernment, you're able to see the mistake as only, perhaps you didn't drill down deep enough or observe something.
Or you didn't look at it one more second
or second.
Give it one more.
And so it becomes this cycle of, it goes right back into discernment. So a mistake isn't the end of the world. It brings you back to the start of discernment, to where you need to go and observe maybe a little bit deeper so that you can make a wiser decision. And so when you see that it just loops right back around, back into the examination process, you tend not to grab it as ownership, as it's a mistake, I made it. It's just leading you right back around to go and to observe more and drill down more and find out how this could have been a more skillful choice.
And you know, you really do have to get your own self out of your way.
Uh-huh.
Because when you start beating yourself up, it's like, okay, you know what? Enough about you and how you're...
Well, that's one level of discernment. Even that's going deeper in itself, because when you actually look at your choices and you take into consideration your own thought process and your own perceptions, right? It is really this fixed you. There's a lot of voices in your head going on before you make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And if you slow down long enough, you see that there's almost a committee of the mind going on, and you have to discern between the committee who's the more skillful member and who you're going to listen to.
And sometimes that takes looking back and saying, what were the results when I let this committee member take a hold last time?
Take a hold.
And we talk about ardency and looking at that stuff. You've got to be there to be able to see the results of what that committee member said, so that the next time it comes up, you can say, hey, you didn't work for me last time. I'm not buying it.
See, that gets back to authenticity, and we can see it's weaving its way all the way through the 10 mind qualities.
Absolutely.
Goodwill is also an element of judgment. You have to decide your admirable friends.
Yeah, it's a wisdom quality. So it's going to take an element of time and patience and observation.
Let's just throw some synonyms out there for judgmental. Irrational, offhand, personal, subjective, superficial. Okay?
Check.
That covers what you said, Carol. And I'm going to go for judicious. Let's get that out of the... how do you spell judicious? I-O-U.
But you often see judicious.
Judicious would
if you put that choice
be accurate,
there.
Astute, informed, profound, acute. Okay? So this...
That just oozes...
Discriminating. Yeah. See, there you go. You've got... So we're often told as meditators, don't be judgmental. Now, that's a tough order, because the thinking mind makes judgments all the time, right? So I think when we say judgmental, I like what you're saying, Carol. Let's associate that word of rushing to judgment, you know, judgmental, right? But as a form of judgment, judicious is clearly a form of judgment. It's a more discerning form of judgment.
When you think of judgment, you want to look at what context are you judging? Correct.
Okay, well, that brings up what Carol said, being skillful. In other words, it's a judgment that is skillful, meaning that it's leading us to less stress. Getting back to the context of the overall reliable happiness in the context of the program.
And when you think about it, isn't it worth taking a second look at something if it's going to lead you to stress or happiness? Wouldn't you take a second look and just say, let me just give it one more shot, and if it's going to mean me being miserable and beating myself up over? What's it going to cost? It can cost you happiness.
It's
stress free. You know what it's like? Okay, there's a what is it? L'Oreal had a commercial of like hair coloring, and the woman ends with the moniker, "Because I'm worth it." I mean, aren't you worth it enough to make that decision? When you put it like, I'm worth it.
Yeah.
I'm worth taking that extra minute to make sure that I'm on that right path.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's actually a quote in the Dhammapada, which is an early text of the Buddha, the Pali quote, that quotes the Buddha as saying, if you see a greater pleasure that comes from forsaking a lesser pleasure, be willing to forsake that lesser pleasure for the greater one. And the translator who apparently translated this from the Pali said, that cannot possibly be the translation. It's just too obvious.
Yeah.
Everybody does that. Really?
Yeah.
Does everybody act that way? Are we trading lesser pleasures for greater pleasures?
Well, we really get into this is where we get into the cause and effect. And I talk with a lot of young individuals, and on the surface, they understand, they say cause and effect, yes, but then you ask them to go into that exact topic. You know, if I were to give you a $5 bill today and say you can either have this $5 bill today, but if you wait till next week, I'll give you $10. Majority of the people are going to say, I'll take that $5 right now.
Right.
Right? If they get the one or two that says, well, hold up now. Let me just see what this is all about and considers going the next step. There was a study done that did that, and they found this pocket of
individuals. Well, those are the kids that took the marshmallows. Remember that study where the kids took the marshmallows? They were in a room and said, if you delay gratification and choose not to eat this marshmallow, right? And they had them on film. If you do, and we'll give you, there's two marshmallows on the table. If you delay, we'll give you five.
Right.
Right? And they sent 20 kids in there. Three turned out to wait, and they tracked those kids all the way through their lives.
Yes, they were great
successes.
Yeah.
So simply delaying the marshmallow was an indication of their level of discernment at a very early age.
Right, exactly. It wasn't the fact that they just weren't going to take it. They used some bit of thought and reason to say, I'm not going to choose to grab those right
now. Well, that's what Carol adds an element. When she looks at discernment, if I heard it correctly, she's talking about skillful, which basically means there's a point to the discernment. It's not just looking at it for the context of the discernment is whether or not it leads to stress or not, which really, notice the word leads to stress, causes us to think about the present action and its effects. So it's a cause and effect kind of way to look at it. And that's what I think is missing, because that's the short-term, long-term argument. And most of our lesser pleasures are short-term decisions. Right, so we don't look to the long-term consequences, both for us and for others. And it sounds like, oh, this is so obvious, but is it? When you really look at your own actions, are you making every decision in the context of that? You wish you were.
Yeah.
Right?
I do. I wish I were.
But, you know, we're not going to frustrate ourselves, because we're going to go right down to, right here we're going to take a break, but when we come back, what we're going to do is we've asked our listening audience to write us and let us know good decisions they've made in the past, poor decisions they've made in the past, and what do they consider the definition of a good decision. In other words, what goes into a good decision? And I think you'll see that there's, as much as we want to be hard on ourselves saying we're making too much short-term or too much pleasure decisions, there have been some good decisions made and we can learn from. So let's take a moment and go through that stuff. It's okay with you all?
Yep.
Still
okay.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is, what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
From the break. I can't believe the first half hour just flew by. When you said a break, I thought, surely you were reading the clock wrong.
Yeah. Let's get to it.
Go ahead. Did you have something to say from the last segment? Were you going to say?
No. I'm good.
Got it. Okay. Do you want me to start with my letter? We got a letter, actually an email in from an admirable friend. And this person actually quoted from a book, but it was a quote from Ajahn Chah, and it was, when you have wisdom, contact with experience is like standing at the bottom of a ripe mango tree. We get to choose between the good and rotten mangoes. It is all to your profit because you know which fruits will make you sick and which are healthy. So I thought that was a pretty good quote. And then the writer goes on to say, by training ourselves in mindfulness, we begin to see clearly the healthy and unhealthy fruit. And as we practice mindfulness with pleasant and unpleasant experiences, we discover the power of mindfulness to allow a healthy response to whatever arises. And but I thought that mango tree was pretty cool. But there was a follow-up about sharing the experience as far as when you've made good choices and when you haven't. And the mango analogy really works for me, this writer says, because when I make not so good choices, I have a very physical sensation of not feeling well. For example, if I gossip about other people, I feel icky. My body seems to know it's not good. Same goes for any action where I'm not treating myself well. I actually do not feel well. I feel uncomfortable, anxious, tensed up, and maybe a little nauseous. Sort of like how you would feel horrible if you ate a rotten mango. It's all cause and effect. I have to reflect on past experiences and remember what leads to happiness and what leads to a horrible sick stomach.
Wow. Have to reflect on past experiences. That's what you were saying, Alex.
But that's really a great visual to have, is if you
Absolutely.
Look at the choices like rotten and good fruit. I mean, if you were there to visually see a choice and you looked at the fruit, you wouldn't pick the rotten fruit. You'd pick the good fruit.
Right. I think it really speaks, and I was talking to someone about this today, about stress as being the teacher. You know, it's right there in front of you. It's giving itself out. What did the writer say? In anxiety, in this ill feeling and all this. These are all stressors because they're taking us away from the moment. They're taking us on a journey that's tearing us apart. And so here it is, physically manifesting itself. You've got to dive into that. And exactly what the writer said, let's go back. That's your stopping point. Cut it. Mm-hmm. Let me go back, look at how this came about so I can make a better choice here going forward. Mm-hmm. Very skillful.
Yeah. I thought it was great. So I want to thank this particular.
The only thing I'd caution is to make sure that sick feeling, you don't take that personal. You realize from a cause and effect standpoint that you made a choice that was a wrong choice, and you learn from that action as if you were learning to play an instrument.
Yeah.
If you clearly look at, and especially if you take the bad fruit example, I hate to say that, you know, you all of a sudden think you're bad fruit or you're spoiled fruit because you made a bad choice. The key to the practice is really learning from your mistakes. And the stress is a manifestation of a mistake. Right? It's hard to say that because we all take mistakes so personal. But if we really can distance ourselves from that, it's so helpful.
Yeah.
Try to shift and see it as an opportunity. Roll up our sleeves and look at it again.
Yeah. It's constant work. It's constant pulling ourselves out of the drama, you know, the storyline as one of the committee members, and try to create some distance. What do we call that? The witness or the director, and see the actions. Intention, the action, the result.
Well, what do they say? You gotta crack a few eggs to make an omelet. You know, in order you to fully have all the details and have really all the evidence you need to make a wise decision, there's going to be bad decisions made that factor into that.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah.
That's why we can so well comment on other people's mistakes, because we're one step removed from them.
Right.
We are really good at that, if you think about it. We see other people's mistakes, and they're so obvious, especially when you're growing up children, right? Because they're kind of like, got a little bit of your behavior pattern, and you see it, and
you've seen it before. You've seen it before, Zane. I've done that before.
Right, except notice you're removed from the equation. You're not looking at yourself, which I believe blinds us. And, you know, we've got a dog in the fight when we're looking at our own actions, and we take it so personal. When, in fact, if you can kind of... I told one of my clients in Europe... that, you know, if you want to use me when you're out there on the golf course deciding about whether there was a, just add, say, what would Buddy say right now? You know, just shift yourself out of your own routine and get another perspective on a decision. So I would just caution the discernment to take yourself into consideration. Okay, Carol, any other one you want to read?
No.
Alex, you want to shift to...
Sure.
To a letter.
Let's take a look at another letter here from one of our admirable friends on the show tonight. Well, earlier on on social media at the Admirable Friends Group. I think you posed a question out there on the social media. And you were looking for a response in three different ways. What are some of the good choices? How do you know it's a good choice? And what are not so good choices? And what'd you learn? And so this writer said, what are some of the good choices you've made in your life? Working on my mental capabilities to complement my athletic ones to make me a better golfer. And the other good choice was undergoing training to help control stress and make better decisions according to my life objectives. Very nice. So those were the good choices that were made. And then what I feel is the number two question, how do you decide what is a good choice, I think is very important out of the three. I think how you determine whether or not it was good or not, once again, making a judgment call, saying this was a good choice. This writer says, something that impacts your life positively and helps achieve any goals and happiness. And second, reduces any feelings of stress or makes stress less likely. We'll get back to that here in a second. Third, what choices were not so good in your life? And what did you learn? Relying on just athletic training to build my talent without recognizing the obstacle was actually my own mind.
Wow.
And that's from one of our...
Sounds like one of your clients, Alex, in the sports world here.
I wish.
Looks like a star client.
This one's going places. Very, very intuitive stuff here. And I want to go back to the how they know it was a good choice versus a bad choice. And I think this is where a lot of the drilling down detail works, because sometimes we rush to judgment and say, oh, that was a good choice or that was a bad choice really quickly without looking and saying, okay, well, could it be a good choice now, but could it be a bad choice in future tense? Okay, so on this whole scale of it, how do we really say this is a good choice now versus not? And so the writer very skillfully put it back to the goals that they wish to achieve, almost the determination as being out there, as saying, the way I measure, the measuring stick of whether or not it is a good choice, I measure it against my determinations. Does it get me closer to them or further from them? And that is something I think is a good measuring stick to go up against, because you've put the determination out there. Those were your objectives. You wanted to meet them. And so you're basically calling yourself out and saying, did I follow through with what my determination was, or didn't I? And from there, you're able to kind of say yes. If not, then you could say, I need to go back and see where can I have made a more skillful decision towards that objective.
Definitely. There's a lot of wisdom in that letter, huh? Let's take another one.
You know, I wanted to interject something here, and it made me think when, Alex, you were talking about the second one about reduces any feelings of stress or makes stress less likely. I often hesitate. One of the discerning factors you were talking about was either action, speech, or thoughts. And speech for me is I would rather not say anything. I kind of tend to, you know, suck it up and not say anything when I often want to say something, you know, because my biggest line and what you guys all through your growing up used to say is what I should have said was, like, usually I come in and say, well, what I should have said was, and I never actually say it, but like I'm a legend in my own mind with what I should have said, so to speak. But I find that when I do make the choice to say something, much like the previous reader with the mangoes and everything, if it was a good choice, hindsight, I don't feel any residual feeling at all. There's no stress involved. You know, was that the right thing to say? Or, oh, I feel bad I said it. If I have a certain determination and commitment feeling at the end, I know that the action and the words were correct. The choice was right.
You know, in my practice, with both choices, I actually find whether I say it was a good choice or a bad choice, when the choice comes back again, I still use discernment, even knowing if it was a good choice. Just because it was good, at one point in time doesn't mean it's going to be good the next time it comes around. You still have to be very careful to look at it and look at it in the context of what's going on now. Are my determinations still the same? What am I dealing with here now? You know, I was thinking about it. You know, it could be anything. You could make a choice today to not brush your teeth, right? And then tomorrow it would be a good decision, you know, depending on what the circumstances were. So whether it's good or bad, you still have to continue to look at it and observe it and find ways.
Well, I think that's a really important point, because what we're talking about here in discernment as it relates to the inner mind quality is not the choices we're making in the outer world as much as how do we build that inner quality of discernment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you're speaking to, Alex, suggests that we have to learn whether it was a good decision or a bad decision. If you're open and honest with it and you're with it, that's how you grow your discernment quality.
Absolutely.
You know, it's living with the consequences and the truth associated in the awareness with those choices. And that's why it's there really can't be a bad decision if you're aware of it. If your intentionality is to grow the discernment factor.
Mm-hmm.
Because I find that discernment grows from a gross form to a subtle form is the way it goes. If it's growing correctly, mm-hmm. if it's growing organically, it starts at a gross level, which might just be a simple choice. Where are we going to go out to eat, or you know, what should I say under these situations? And there are a lot of our admirable friends that are dealing with issues like that. But as we continue to grow discernment, you know, the question becomes, how do you grow discernment? You don't just end up with a zero sum game at the end of your life and say, I've made better choices because I made them.
No, you're consciously making a decision to look and examine
and be honest about the consequences.
Both good and bad. Yeah. You have to.
I think
you're,
it was Aristotle.
You're building a skill, and it's almost like a craftsman, honing his craft.
Right. And then making mistakes every time,
sure.
Whether it's a basket weaver or a sculptor. So the question becomes, how do we, in our mind, grow our own mind in discernment? That's the question. How do you grow it? You grow it from being aware of intentions, actions, and results. You're a machine. You can see if you spent all your time questioning who I am, you know, where did I come from, that's not growing discernment. Those are discussions that are going to lead you nowhere.
The great thing, and I can't say this enough, the great thing about intentions, actions, and results is that it's a formula that you can deconstruct right back to the beginning. If you want to really dissect something and go back, start with the result. Was it a result that works for you or doesn't? If not, go back to the action. What action,
right.
You know, you can do it with both. A good result or a bad result. You go back to the action. What was the action that proved up that result? What was the intention behind that action?
But if your frame of reference is stress, and ergo the stressful choice, just make an assumption that the stressful choice you made was your mistake because it led to stress, right? So your stress becomes your teacher. So you're learning from your mistakes as you go. And you're honing down, going from gross mistakes to more subtle mistakes. In point of fact. Right? So that's the progression. And that's what I think it takes, the attitude it takes to really grow discernment as a mind quality. You've got to be prepared to learn from your mistakes.
I think you and I had this talk, I think it was maybe a year or so ago, and we said, you know what, we're really becoming more childlike and really going back to really when we made mistakes,
right.
And when we learned from you. How did you learn not to touch a hot stove?
Mm-hmm.
You burnt yourself. I mean, a child at that song. So we're not talking about these huge, you know, mental geniuses out there that are fixing the world. We're talking something a simple, you know, toddler understands growing up, you know, intuitively.
Alex, we got a shout out for you. Talking about the word objective, this is from Linda. Can you speak to it connecting to improving thought processes?
Objective speaking to thought process.
Talking about the word objective.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you mentioned the word objective. Can you speak to connecting it to improving thought process?
I guess objectives was more, I use objectives more as determinations, goals that were being put out there, you know, short-term, long-term, and a distance. So the objective or the determination.
Or the goal.
Endpoint,
you're using those words synonymous.
The endpoint, the result. I'm using them
the
synonymous.
The intention of what
exactly.
You were trying to accomplish, right.
And so when we put that intention out there, that objective, and we're talking about discernment, we can navigate which choices are more skillful versus the other when we measure them up against the objective. So the objective is the unbiased against the wall.
Well, that would be the intention, right?
Correct.
And then the action would be measured, or you'd be aware of the action, and then the result, which would go against the intention, and you see how it matches up.
So to answer the question, it is the process, I believe, for growing the quality of discernment, is to have an objective to measure it up against. And so I would say to the listener, set it out there, try it, and see if it works. Put out a determination out there, and then watch your choices as it relates to that that objective or that goal you're looking out there, and see how the choices change or may not change depending on what you have.
Yeah, we used to call that in business closing the loop. You know, you set a monthly target on your financials. And then you'd have to sit once a month and reevaluate how did you do against that result. Not so much to beat yourself up, but you became a better planner the next month because you saw how far off you were and whether it was realistic or not. We used to call it closing the loop.
Absolutely.
Which is the action against the objective.
And it takes some judgment that we go back to. There is skillful judgment in saying, well, this is a determination or objective I want to put out there to go against. So it takes some judgment in doing so.
Yeah. But remember that we have to leave room for wonder, too. So there's times when there aren't any objectives that you are just observing and taking note as well. Okay, another comment on good choices is the choice to take in my nephew after my brother died. The reflection, on the surface, this could appear to be a bad decision as the situation did not work out in the end due to his drug problems. However, the situation taught me some important lessons about generosity and boundaries. I think this helped increase my understanding that what others do is out of your control. That's just such a wonderful comment.
That's so insightful.
Well, that illustrates the point that you don't have to have a win at the end of the consequence to learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Here's a case where on face value, it looks like you made a bad decision because you brought in a nephew. But because of the subsequent learning that took place, look at the inner mind quality that was built, became more generous. I learned from that. And also learned equanimity when it says that I increase my understanding what others do is out of my control. That's a fascinating
thing. This also goes back to right what I was saying. What might appear like a good choice today might not prove to be a good choice down the road, and which tells me that we need to be vigilant in looking at both good choices and bad choices to see.
And this was the opposite in his case. What looks like a bad choice, it turned out to be a good choice. Choice to plan for having a child far in advance. The reflection, this planning let us put things in place personally, financially, etc., to provide for him in a way that was important to us. Allowed my wife and I to come to an understanding of how we want to raise a child. I think we are all thriving as a family in no small part to that approach. That's really quite insightful, isn't it?
I'm going to go to the same letter, but I was going to go with bad choices.
Okay.
And the choice of a bad choice and what the reflection was on that.
All right.
And one of the bad choices was to take up smoking. I'm wondering if some of our listeners can equate to this one. But what the writer learned was that breaking bad habits can be excruciating, but with persistence, it is possible. And the person goes on to say, I spent 2 years trying to quit. During that 2 years, I would feel embarrassed, often because I told others I was quitting or had quit and would lapse back into the habit. Then when I would sneak smokes, I would feel like a fraud. But I did quit, and it was established in my mind that if it is worth it, you have to keep trying no matter how many times you fail.
Mm.
There's persistence right there. We talk about persistence, and there's a great example of that one.
Yes.
But not, you know, you could see the delicate dance between beating yourself up and trying to pick yourself up from your bootstraps and say, no, I'm going to keep going. Try it again.
Yeah.
Do it again. You got it.
But in this particular case, they realized that the choice they made set up a habit that was very hard to break. So a big lesson could be, you know, those are big choices that affect you long term.
Yes. I think the level of choices is something to be aware of. There are big choices and there are, you know, what we would call, you know, menial choices.
Right.
Both, I think, take a level of attention.
Let me put it this way. I don't think anybody takes up smoking thinking through that it's going to be the hardest habit in the world to break if I start it.
I agree. I don't think so either.
They take it for instant pleasure, and then they end up with it. So what I like about this particular illustration that you read, Carol, is the fact that they realize that there was a habit that took a long time to do it. Again, this person is a learner. You can see the writing because they're learning through their mistakes. Mm-hmm. And as long as we're not taking it personal, it's just an upward spiral of growing discernment.
But the beauty is, if this writer didn't kind of stop and reflect and step back from the beating up and the self
We'd hear a whole different narrative.
We'd never get this beautiful letter with all these pearls of wisdom here to share with everybody.
No, you'd get a letter talking about what went wrong with them and, you know, how the cigarette companies are bad because they put too much nicotine in cigarettes. I mean, there'd be a lot of external excuses. The common element of these admirable friends, and this is why I like bringing their material into our show, you know, so we're kind of here as commentators now on our groups, is really letting them live these inner qualities. And it's really illustrating how they can grow. When you bring this material in, it's just wonderful. It's motivating, like you said, Carol.
Well, it is. I read it and I just think it's wonderful.
I like this format. I like reading this other stuff. I got time for another one. Let's bring another one up, huh? Here's a gentleman who writes, "When our children were still quite young, through observation of ourselves and others, my wife and I had the valuable insight that most of the stress associated with children was due with expecting them to behave like adults, which is more convenient. With this realization, we chose to allow them to be children and to adjust our lives to this reality. Sure enough, they changed naturally at each stage of life and they grew into well-balanced adults. I feel this was a good choice and led it away from stress." Here's a classic case of expectation management. And together, I like the way the husband and wife work together on this to make that shift. Kind of remembers me with the shift that we made with our oldest son, Carol, huh? That one wake-up call.
Yeah.
You know, that we learned more, this couple. And then he writes, "The bad choices that come to mind immediately are spending on things I can't afford and don't need. Though I have learned this results in stress, I have not fully mastered the restraint necessary to control this." Well, they're spoken like a true American, like all of us, right?
Oh, yeah.
All are purchasing things we don't need, right? To matters of degree. Yeah. And we're all on the road of learning from this. Though I have learned this results in stress, I have not fully mastered the restraint necessary to control this. Well, this is not this in total. I'm sure this reader, if they were to break it up a little bit, that they're not buying things in particular that they used to purchase.
Mm-hmm.
It's evident in the writing here that there's some wisdom. And this is why you almost have to use discernment to measure your own discernment. Right? Because you can easily just say, well, I still buy stuff I don't need. That's an aggregate form, right? Well, are you buying as much as you did before? No, I'm buying less.
Well, it's not giving them a free pass. It's sort of giving them a latitude to say, you're slugging at it. You're doing fine. As long as, you know, you're realizing it and you're still working at it.
I wonder if I could share with the listeners, with you guys, my bad choice kind of area and share some of my experience. You know, almost as setting a goal way out there at the end line and measuring everything off of that, the worst choice I've made was when I stopped my practice, and the cascade of bad choices came off of that bad choice.
Right. So that's kind of a keystone.
That
poor
was a
choice.
Keystone one, just like having a keystone determination. It was a keystone
poor
bad
choice.
It was a poor choice to not work on my internal qualities, which led to a lot of other bad choices. And so working that back, I then turned it around and said, start working on your internal
qualities. Yeah, make that your weekly determination.
Make that it. And then
that's
soon
high
enough,
leverage.
And then exactly, it was the high leverage, and then soon enough, better choices were being made because of that higher leverage.
We've got 60 seconds left before we have to close, but I want to give one more choice out because it's a real endorsement. And it's the choice was to seek out admirable friends. And the reflection was, I had dabbled in meditation for about a decade, but could never build up momentum to have what I call a real practice. I would read or reread books every couple of years on the subject to try to kickstart a practice that would work for a period of time. Finally, I stumbled on a book that dedicated some space to advice that you need to seek out other people that are practicing to progress on the journey. I have a lot of gratitude for that author writing about this experience. It led me to admirable friends, and that has spurred me on to some real momentum in my practice. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. And
thank you.
What better endorsement can we get from that?
We need our admirable friends.
We do. We need you, and we're looking forward to you next week. And keep those letters coming. You know, we're going to be asking, and I really enjoy it, huh? This format's great, folks.
We love sharing it with everybody.
Yeah. Thanks, folks. See you next week.
Good night, everybody.
Take care.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.